Behavioral Health Today, a podcast by Triad Behavioral Health, covering trending topics in behavioral and mental health. This podcast is designed to share unique and relevant topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and today I'm joined by Dr. Steven Saltanov. Steve is a licensed psychologist, professor at Pepperdine University, a professional speaker, and a therapeutic humorist. He is recognized as an international expert in the therapeutic uses of humor and is the former president of the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor. In 2012, he received their Lifetime Achievement Award in Therapeutic Humor. He has written numerous innovative articles on humor, including an article published in the APA journal, The Humanistic Psychologist. He has appeared on PBS, Fox, Stars, and Lifetime and is currently featured in an episode of What's Your Ailment, which streams on topic. Steve has also been quoted in Time, USA Today, Forbes, Prevention, and many other national publications. Steve joins us today as an expert on how to use humor in a therapeutic way to reduce stress and anxiety. Steve, welcome to Behavioral Health Today.
Thanks, Graham. Pleasure to be here.
Really nice to have you. As we think about therapy and your therapeutic approach, share with us your formulation of the basic nature and goals of psychotherapy as you see it.
Well, that's a great question, Graham. And over my 30, 35 years as a clinical psychologist, I have grown and developed. But fundamentally, psychotherapy is about relationship. And in the 1960s and 70s, there was a great deal of research on relationship. And in modern times, in the last 10 years, there has been a flurry of research again on relationship. So when we look at psychotherapy, what we're looking at is a therapeutic relationship. And then the components that go into that are certain ways of building a relationship, almost, in fact, some people believe, regardless of a theoretical approach, regardless of whether you're Freudian or cognitive. I mean, I have my approach, and I'm a what I would call a humanistic cognitive therapist. And what that means is if you were watching me work as a therapist, you would see what you would think was more humanistic or person-centered psychotherapy. However, in my head, I am working as a cognitive therapist. So my interaction may feel humanistic to the client, but the processes that I'm using as I reflect back what I'm hearing from the client are actually cognitive, therapeutically based.
Very good. Very good. We know that in the therapeutic process, I can't agree more around therapy is based foundationally, kind of a cornerstone way, on the importance of that relationship. I understand that relationships and early in our lives are the ones that create some challenges for us, but I also know that relationships are curative. And to be able to have that therapeutic relationship as kind of a foundational piece of the work, I believe is really everything. So I agree with that very much. You know, I also know that therapy involves the exploration of feelings and thoughts and behaviors, all of which can be a very challenging and painful process at times, not to mention the role of some biochemistry that can get kicked in there as well. So given this process and those features, how do you envision humor being incorporated into the therapeutic relationship?
That is such a good question, and you framed it well. When we look at what is the goal of psychotherapy, what do we as psychotherapists do, we are targeting how people feel, how people behave, their physiology or biochemistry, which is when we send a psychiatrist for meds maintenance, and their cognitions. And these four primary areas of human existence interact with each other. So if I'm a cognitive therapist, I may focus on changing thoughts, but the goal is to change thoughts to change feelings.
Yes.
Now, that's a fundamental model of psychotherapy, that these four areas interact. And in the late 1980s, when I was learning this model, I was also at the beginning of my therapeutic humor career. And suddenly I realized that all four of these areas that I was using to intervene as a psychotherapist, I could create interventions using humor. In other words, humor shifts how we feel. Humor shifts how we think. Humor shifts how we act. And humor actually shifts our physiology and biochemistry. So that was thrilling to me. And that really catapulted me into my interest of humor in psychotherapy.
I love that. So you're proposing really that despite the often intense and challenging nature of therapy, we can incorporate humor and laughter in such a way that it actually benefits and actually advances that therapeutic process without being distracting or, let's say, colluding in the avoidance of any difficult content. Say a little bit more about that and the benefits that might in fact be experienced as you incorporate humor in that way.
Okay, let me just take one of those four areas. Say we talk about feelings.
Okay.
And many people come to therapy because they have specific distressing feelings. And yes. Let me just mention that I philosophically don't believe in negative feelings. I don't believe negative feelings exist. Feelings are not rated positive or negative, because if somebody's angry, is that positive or negative? It's anxious, positive or negative. All feelings are important, give us data. So just looking at feelings, if you have someone that's anxious and you want to help them to feel less anxious, now you pointed out you could use avoidance, you can distract them, and humor can be used that way. But in fact, if I use humor with a client, that client, in the moment that they experience humor, cannot feel emotionally distressed. That is, distressing emotions and humor can't occupy the same psychological space.
That's very good.
So what they're learning from me, at minimum, and I could go on and on and on with many examples, but at minimum, people who feel anxious are learning a strategy of how to manage anxiety. And I distinguish between manage and cure, because in this case, if they use humor without understanding it better, it may just be management, meaning that when they're feeling anxious, they tell themselves a joke, or they visualize something funny, or they watch a sitcom. And in those moments, not only, well, distraction would be working to manage the anxiety, but the humor actually has a potent effect of managing distressing emotion. As you're feeling humor, the feeling of being anxious or depressed goes away.
Really good. So while humor can be, well, it is one of our higher order defenses, it can also be used therapeutically as a coping strategy to alter that moment, to allow the person to experience something different and very necessary, maybe to move them out of the place where they're stuck.
Yes, exactly correct. That it can be used in that moment to move them forward in a way that they are unstuck. And yes, it may only be for the moment, but they know they have the strategy.
Yes.
And now they can invoke that strategy in future moments. And the more they do that, the more they learn to reduce feeling anxious or depressed or angry.
Yeah, really good. You know, I work kind of in a psychodynamic model. And we talk about creating corrective emotional experiences to move us out of those places where our schemata or our model or our story kind of keeps us stuck. And when we introduce corrective experiences, people are confronted with a new way of feeling, a new behavior, a new thought, which is very much what you're talking about right here. It disrupts that paradigm that they've always had or been working out of, to then introduce something new, not just with the humor, but also they get to experience something different that challenges an old way of being and introduces maybe a new way of being as well, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So it introduces this new way of being. And another point there is that it then makes the person who's anxious more confident
yes.
in his or her ability to manage feeling anxious.
So it's empowering, really.
Yeah, it's empowering. So now not only are you targeting emotion, but the person is now shifting their thinking.
Yeah.
And so one of the biggest areas of thinking with anxiety is, I can't control my anxiety. It's going to come up on me and I'm out of control. Now, not only do they feel less anxious, but they begin to shift their cognition, thinking, wow, all of a sudden I have a way to be unstuck or out of feeling anxious. And in feeling more confident that way, their experience of anxiety goes down.
I really like that. So they get to kind of go through the world with a greater confidence that I can manage these things rather than being subject or, you know, at the mercy of my feelings, thoughts, whatever they may be. I get to introduce something new that changes me in that moment. I love that. You know, as we're talking about humor and therapy, some might think that there's actually a theoretical approach to therapy called humor therapy, much like we might reference what you said earlier, cognitive behavioral therapy or psychodynamic therapy. Is there actually a therapeutic approach called humor therapy versus integrating humor into therapy? Distinguish that for us.
Okay. I'm a firm believer that humor is an intervention within a therapeutic context. I have colleagues that call themselves humor therapists, and I hear that term and I cringe. I don't believe that humor is its own unique therapy, But in fact, it is a way of intervening within a therapeutic process. So if you're psychodynamic, I'm more humanistic cognitive, I can use humor therapeutically within this theoretical approach. But what I'm not doing is a humor therapy. So if people know that I use humor and they come to me and want humor therapy, in other words, I'm going to sit down and make them laugh and we're going to tell jokes, that's not what it's about. In fact, putting it in psychodynamic terms, it's very similar in psychodynamic theory that in a session, if you make one or two solid interpretations, maybe even three or four, but usually in a psychodynamic session, you don't make a lot of interpretations. And the same is true with humor, so that I'm using some humor interventions, but it's not a constant part of the process. If you were watching me work, you might see the humor, but you might not even realize that it was an intervention.
Yeah, I get it. I use humor every now and then, I'm going to ask you a couple of stories here in just a second. But I've used it before too, when, you know, sometimes we don't want to take ourselves too seriously. And sometimes we kind of get down on ourselves or bogged down the way we've always done something. And oftentimes we can use humor to kind of, that intervention you're talking about, kind of lighten somebody up and almost kind of create a little bit of a crack for something new to be introduced. But for us to laugh at ourselves a little bit can be very relieving. And, you know, of course I would do that. You know, what was I thinking, kind of a thing. But actually what I was thinking was really actually something pretty survival based. And I was pretty smart to do that, wasn't I? And so we begin to kind of shift the mood around what has been very weighted, maybe very heavy laden with the way that it's been interpreted. And maybe in that humor, we get to kind of shift, like you're saying earlier, maybe the way that we feel about something that can open the door for something else to be introduced.
Absolutely. And that can get into shifting the thinking. But you've also introduced another issue I haven't mentioned, which is if you use humor empathically, and I distinguish in my work between empathic humor and hostile humor. But if I use humor empathically, what I am doing with the client is bonding.
Yes.
And we know, again, that one of the most important parts of psychotherapy is the bond between the therapist and client. If I can use this humor in a way, even if I'm not using it as a diagnostic tool or as an intervention tool, which I do, but if I'm just using it to create a bond in the relationship, that will be healthy. Yeah. So I think that speaks to a little bit of what you were just talking about.
Absolutely. I think too, you know, sometimes when we're so heavy laden with life or the things we're bringing into therapy and you know, a lot of times people are come in and they are in acute crisis. And so we're joining them at that level and place that they're at. But sometimes that humor can also give a little bit of hope that nothing is all bad. It's never all bad. There's some pieces in there that are maybe kind of playful or fun, or maybe we get to introduce them or remind them of some dimensions in their life that aren't all bad. Sometimes we get very myopic in our pain. And when we introduce something fun or playful, they get to see, yeah, you know, it isn't all bad. And maybe I can work with some of these things, and humor as an intervention can really kind of lighten a perspective and kind of open kind of the aperture of it isn't all bad, is it?
Absolutely. And as you were talking about that, it brings up another issue, which we won't have time to discuss much, but I'll just mention. Yeah. And that is, I've written several articles on the timing of humor. When do you begin to use humor with a client? When they come in crisis, do you use humor in those moments or do you not? And there are all sorts of reasons why you would use or not use humor in a variety of different situations. So I just wanted to mention that. I don't want to go into that depth because that's kind of off of the topic, I think, because that gets real detailed.
Well, I think what you're highlighting is that therapy, despite the sciences behind it and the theoretical approaches behind it, there's an art to it and a timing to it and a real appreciation for when is something introduced and when is something not. And so, yeah, it's not just coming in and having a, you know, a comedian or just humor to try and change the way we are. So I know like any other intervention tool or any other intervention, it gets to be used in the client's best interest for what they're going through. And so talking about kind of the process, I love to hear what therapy looks like. Kind of behind the door for those that are doing it. In this case, as you're seeing somebody, I would love to, you know, hear one of your stories or an example that illustrates this therapeutic process that you are very attuned to and aware of. Share with us a personal story in which you found the application of humor really as being an effective tool or intervention or process in the therapy relationship.
Okay, I have so many. It's hard for me to
choose
one. Let me choose one of my favorites. And this is fairly early on in my humor career. I had a client that I've been working with for over 5 years, okay. and I introduce her as my client who is absolutely dedicated to her depression. Now, you may have had a client like that, where the depressed, feeling depressed becomes a badge of honor, and I want to be depressed. Yeah. And I worked with her from different theoretical approaches. I was humanistic, cognitive. I had psychodynamic training in my early years. I did psychodynamic work, interpreted the secondary gains of being depressed.
Yeah.
She insisted she did not want to be depressed.
She was loyal.
She was loyal.
Loyal to that depression.
And she had been through a litany of psychotropic medications, so she had been on antidepressants, nothing worked. After 5 years, I pretty much said, you know, I'm not getting anywhere with you. I think I need to refer you to someone else. I'm not being of help. In my struggle to find a referral for her, she was on Medicare, and at the time, there were very few Medicare therapists. I made the decision to start using humor with her while I was trying to refer her, and she kept coming back and saying, none of your referrals are working. So she comes in one day, and during the session, I say something that's really funny, and I did that on purpose. And she turns to me and she says, I don't like when you do that. Oh. And I said, I know, and I let it go. Next session, I do something again, purposefully funny, and she says, I really don't like when you do that. Huh. I said, yes, I know. Next session, she comes in, and I do something funny again, and she gets really almost, not enraged, but energized and says,
yes,
I really don't like when you do that.
Okay.
And I turn to her, because now's my therapeutic intervention moment. And I say to her, what is it about my using humor that bothers you so much? And she looks me straight in the eye and she says, when you make me laugh, I don't feel depressed.
Ah, here we go.
And the light bulb exploded in the room. She heard her words. All of the years of me interpreting to her that she was dedicated to being depressed, that she wanted to be depressed. But in that moment, when you make me laugh, I don't feel depressed. She got it. Now, this is a very minor intervention. After 5 years of therapy, I didn't think it was going to go anywhere. Well, as it happens, we miss the next week's session. 2 weeks later, she comes back in and she says, you know, this humor stuff really works. I about fell out of my chair. And I said, What do you mean? What works? And she said, over the weekend, I was so depressed. I went over to the Blockbuster store. This is back in the day of Blockbuster and VHS tapes. And I rented a Woody Allen movie. I came home and I watched it. And I felt so much better.
Oh, my.
And that was the beginning of another 5 years of therapy.
But now...
I consistently used humor with her. She started using humor with me. And at the time we ended, she told me that her sense of humor and her use of humor was the second most valuable part of her being, with her religious beliefs being number one. She was very religious, and humor being number two.
Wow, I love it. So from a psychologist's point of view, what was happening? What was she going through that she had to integrate something? You introduced humor, and she had to integrate this into a new way of being. It worked clearly, but she didn't like it at first. There were resistances that she was pushing against. In fact, she was angry at you for even introducing something humorous because it interfered with her commitment to and her loyalty to this identity of being depressed, but she could not be affected by it. What was happening in her internally as you understood that change process?
I think what was happening is that she was beginning to feel some relief, and she began to differentiate those situations where she wanted to feel depressed because of the secondary gains. For example, her parents want her to come and visit. She doesn't want to drive over to her parents. I'm too depressed, secondary gain.
Yep.
And she had many of those. But she learned that that had spilled over into her everyday life, where she was depressed about things that were not so important that she had to use her depression as an excuse not to do them. Right. So that shifting in thinking, I think then she allowed herself to feel more and more humorous. There was another piece to it. She also was very artsy, and she liked to be, or at least see herself as somewhat on the fringe.
Yes.
And to have a therapist that was what she would call a humor therapist, was putting her on the fringe. And so she really liked that. So I think there was part of it that this was an unusual process. Right. So she was right. buying into it because it was new age, fringy, or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that added to her dedication now to use humor.
I love it. What a great story. I also know, too, when people start to integrate new parts, in this case, humor, kind of a lighter view and kind of opening up that aperture, if you will, that's an uncomfortable process. They're beginning to entertain and try on new things that interfere with their old way of being that they're so familiar with, that are so woven into the fabric of who they are. They don't know any other way of being. And then to introduce something, I would imagine that at least initially when she's upset with you introducing this before she watches the Woody Allen movie, she's upset because she's having to integrate something new at a feeling level and experiential level that she doesn't know how to be. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden she begins though to try this on, keep it on, and it becomes part of her new fabric in a way, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. It becomes part of her new fabric. And that's one of the most potent areas of humor is if people have humor more and more as part of their fabric, yeah. that there are other effects of humor that really reduce distressing emotions and reduce negative thinking and change how people behave. There's so many good benefits if it becomes part of your everyday well-being.
I love it. Steve, you know, for those that are interested, what are some of the resources that are available for folks to learn more?
One of the best resources, if people want to learn more about therapeutic humor in general, is the Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor. And okay. their website is aath.org, O-R-G. Okay. And that group is a blend of professionals, psychologists, marriage counselors, nurses, teachers, business people, and lay people. It's quite a diverse organization. And that's really the best organization about therapeutic humor. There's another professional association, if people listening are more academically inclined, and that's called the International Society for Humor Studies. It's ISHS. Their website, however, is humorstudies.org. So the word humor, the word studies.org. And they're much more academic. So unless somebody really wants to look at research and it's not therapeutic, it's all sorts of humor. So it's humor in literature, humor in politics.
Now, I also know, too, that you have your website. Could you share that with us as well?
Oh, absolutely. I have two websites for people who want information about humor and they want some humor available. Humormatters.com.
Okay.
It's humormatters.com. And my other website, which is right now being developed, of course, when people listen to this, it may be complete, is a continuing education website. And that one is mycematters.com. And on that site, it's a portal to programs that I offer for continuing education or webinars that I've done or other kinds of resources. And there are two programs on integrating humor into psychotherapy that can be linked from there to the AATBS website, the Association for Advanced Training in Behavioral Sciences. I have a number of courses with them, two of which are on humor specifically, others on supervision, and one on cognitive therapy.
Very good. Steve, it's been great to have you with us today. What a great opportunity to hear how therapy can benefit from and be moved forward, advanced by the incorporation of humor, properly placed as an intervention, how it begins to be part of a new fabric that changes not just the way that we feel, but the way that we might think and see ourselves in the world and the world around us. And what a great opportunity to have another tool to be able to use as an intervention, smartly and artfully, but in such a great way. Thanks so much for joining us today and sharing this with us.
My pleasure. I'm really glad to have been here.
It's been great to be with you. And to those listening in, we appreciate you being with us today. We look forward to having you join us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community. And if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Behavioral Health Network, all rights reserved.